Hey, it's been a while since we did a cold open on this. So here's what happened. Basically, Lewis is a fucking idiot. Which many of you probably knew, I suspected this all along. But what he did was normally, before we start the podcast, and you don't hear this because I cut it all off and because it's just admin stuff. I said to both Peter and Lewis, I go, all right, guys, let's start. Make sure you've pressed record. I double check everyone's recording. I check I'm recording, and then I do the hello, and we start the podcast. Fine, that's what normally happens. This week, I was in a bit of a rush. I was a bit tired, bit stressed because Peter Chapman, normal Peter, Colossal Blue, couldn't make it, and I had a phone call from. Pete Worthington, who you'll hear in a minute, who's filling in, is marvellous on this episode, and had to sort him out as coming on, and it was all a bit stressful, and we were running about 20 minutes late, and I'd said to Peter, oh no, we'll start at 7:30, it'll go to 9:30, we ended up going about 10, but he didn't mind, luckily, I forgot, and Peter was recording, and I was recording, and I forgot to say to Lewis, I forgot to specifically check with Lewis, that he was recording. And, you know, it's our 40th episode, so I thought it'd probably be all right. And it wasn't. So as you've probably discovered in the past, when we've had a couple of weird episodes, I do record a Skype call locally, which turns out is really convenient this time. So what I've done is Lewis actually didn't talk a lot on this podcast. In there's chunks, you know, he can be quite quiet sometimes, so there's chunks where he doesn't say much, and that's fine. So what I've done is I've kind of spliced it so that, so I've got the original like local recordings of me and Peter, and I've got the Skype recording of Lewis until about 3/4 of the way in, when Lewis actually remembers to hit record. And then you get normal stuff, normal quality for the last. What I've done is I've kind of used the Skype recording way I've had to and tried to sync it up with mine and Peter's. It's just pretty good. It takes about 3 hours to edit this. It's taken me closer to 5 to do this podcast. So hopefully it's all right. Hopefully. That's what I'm praying at the minute, that you like this and it all comes out okay. But yeah, so basically I've done my best with this. Hopefully it's fine. Hopefully that you can understand everyone. That is why there's occasional dips in quality. And it might sound a bit odd because you're going between two different types of recording. But hopefully it's all right. That's a really long intro. Sure, I should stop. So here's the music bit. And yeah, that kind of explains why it's all a bit odd. But yeah, here's the music-y bit. You know? All right. I haven't got the energy for that. All right, everybody. Welcome to episode 4 of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast. I am, as per usual, your host, Chris Litzcombe. I am joined by normal co-host and head of ScreenDemon.com, Lewis Gaston. Say hello, Lewis.
Hello.
Excellent. We're also joined by Peter Wellington due to the other Peter Chapman. His internet is broken. Say hello,
hello,
Peter.
Excellent. Oh, hello.
Hello. Lovely. You may know Peter as 000 from the Sick Vaxis, and you might also know the In Retrospect podcast. If you don't, you should go know it because it's quite good. I like it.
Thank you.
Myself. It's all right. You know, it's very different to us, so I can promote you. You're not really our enemies.
We're not really competitors, are we?
No, it's a very different type of... Yours are actually thoughtful and that sort of thing.
Thank you very much.
And you actually edit stuff together, so it sounds like it's got a nice flow to it. We just sort of talk shit for a bit. but you might also remember Peter was on the Eurogamer podcasts, one of them.
Yep.
So he's used to our particular brand of insanity. And those were really insane podcasts as well. Oh man, you should. It's a good thing you did not come the second day. The second day was crazy.
Yeah,
second day got weird. Right. First thing on my list, Batman is completely fucked. Basically, this is one of the worst releases I can remember. Catwoman DLC codes are missing from boxes. Robin DLC doesn't work. Catwoman DLC to be fair, all these issues have for a tiny proportion of users. But given the sales that game is expected to make, it's still in like the thousands. Catwoman DLC is corrupting the game. There's all these sorts of issues floating around. So what do we think about this? It's a really bad launch for Warner and for Rocksteady.
Yeah, I didn't know that was going on.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, I've heard sort of like Twitter rumblings about it and people sort of complaining and that sort of thing. But am I right in thinking that this Catwoman and Robin stuff, it's not essential to the game, is it?
Well, Catwoman is about 10% of the campaign.
Right.
But if you don't have her in, it kind of just does cut scenes to work around not playing with her. So, it's not essential, but it's still content people have paid for. And particularly as they've made this big deal about, they made this huge deal about Catwoman and then went, by the way, she is a first purchaser code. And then after that, like the fact they went, it's first purchaser code, which irritated everyone anyway. And then they kind of went, and also now it doesn't work. Oops. Seems like a bit of a mistake to me.
I just find it very difficult to get wound up about it. Like,
I'm not very angry about it. It's just not good.
I understand. I understand that it's like a problem in terms of, you know, this is a big company that's putting this game out. You know, this is an expected, you know, late Q3, Q4 release, and it's meant to be this big blockbuster, and there's so much riding on this release. And just to kind of cock it up a little bit in terms of, you know, just simple things like packaging. I mean, in some ways it's very aggravating because, you know, if the disc wasn't in there, if the manual wasn't in there, or, you know, whatever, you'd be a little bit annoyed and that sort of thing. But I find it very difficult to get wound up about it. I think they're going to... I mean, have they given a response as to why this happened?
Their response is just, it was a mistake.
Oh, good.
She's just like, well, we figured that. I assume this probably wasn't deliberate.
You know what I'm getting more angry at?
What?
Because they'll fix those issues.
They will.
Yeah, it's annoying and what have you, but they'll be fixed, or people will be compensated or whatever.
And as they've said, it's something like 0.5% of users, so it's thousands of people, but in terms of the game's release, it is a small proportion.
Yeah, what annoys me more are the people that are moaning about Catwoman being in new copies of the game, saying, oh, but you're ostracising the pre-owned people, and you think, so what? It's a business. And I know, like I've always said, you know, business should come second, but it's a business and it's a new game. It's a massive game. Most people are going to buy it new anyway. So what's the problem? That's what I don't understand. Well, why are people moaning about that?
Well, they're not getting it at all, are they?
I'm sure there'll be an option to buy it separately if you want it.
Oh yeah, you can buy it separately if you want it. The issue for me, personally, is not the fact that they're locking away pre-owned buyers. I mean, that for some people, that's certainly an issue, and I can see where they're coming from. The issue I have with it is they're locking away people who don't have their console connected to the internet, which is you've paid for Catwoman. Paid for the Catwoman DLC as part of the content, and it's not like you can. It's not even. It's not on disc. Apparently, I've heard people saying it's a big download, so it's not like there's even a way to unlock the on disc content.
No, but that I can totally understand more. I mean, the chances of people still not being on the internet are slim, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's still only something like 60% of console users have it connected. The other 40% don't.
Well, that I can understand from people from that point of view. It was more from the pre-owned side of things that I was getting frustrated at people.
Yeah, I mean, the pre-owned side of things is a very different argument. And it's something that people feel very Well, it's an odd one because people feel either very strongly against it or are kind of like me and you and slightly ambivalent about the whole thing and kind of go, oh, well, it's a business decision and whatever.
And I don't, especially with a game like Batman, if you're buying it, if you're worrying about pre-owned copies, it means you're going to be buying it pretty much instantly from release, which means a pre-owned copy isn't actually going to be much cheaper than a full-blown retail copy.
No, exactly.
So why not just get a full-blown retail copy and get all the DLC? It won't be much more expensive.
I mean, that's true. What's your opinion on the whole first purchaser code kind of thing, Peter? I mean, what do you think about this?
Well, okay, so I buy like pretty much all of my games secondhand because I'm in the very fortunate position. I do understand how fortunate I am in that I get sent a lot of stuff for free.
Yes, I mean, so do I. So
yeah, so I mean, you know, and you know, we're kind of all working in that business whereby, you know, we are giving our opinions on stuff and we are members of the press and stuff like that. And we're, you know, we're in that position where we can get stuff for free, and that's brilliant. And, you know, I've got all this work in front of me and I don't really need to be buying new games. So I kind of wait until they're a little bit cheaper and I buy them new, or if they don't get new, you know, if they don't get cheaper in, you know, in a shop, then I go to like my local secondhand store, independent secondhand store, and go and buy it from them. Pink Planet Games in Bristol, just give them a little plug there. No, they're lovely. And but yeah, so like I, that's kind of like how I kind of deal with the whole thing. But I do get a little bit angry about this sort of day one release stuff in terms of like a historical context. And what I mean by this is I'm really big into looking back at like games archives and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and like going back and seeing what older games can offer and seeing how the mediums kind of move forward. And the big thing about all this code stuff at the moment is in like 5 or 10 years' time, how are people like myself and, you know, when we get things like, you know, games historians or modern history scholars, how are they going to go and explore these products and these experiences, you know, the way that they were meant to be played? So, you know, you were saying that the Catwoman DLC is you know, it's a code that you get and it's, I'm assuming, you know, one use, and you know, you go and buy it new and you get all that good stuff and you can play it. And that's marvelous. Right now, that's fantastic. And that totally makes sense from a business perspective. I'm not knocking that. But what happens in 10 years' time when, or like, let's go even further, like in 30 or 40 years' time, and the offspring of my loins wants to go and play Arkham City and they want to explore it and see exactly where the, you know, how the medium has progressed, like what happens to them? To like this is my whole point, you know. Yeah, so what I'm interested in is way down the line, like what are my kids going to be able to do?
Yeah.
Like, are they going to be able to pick up a copy of this game and are they going to be able to experience it in the way that it's meant to be? I guess I'm kind of coming from a sort of preservist kind of perspective on this whole issue and this whole agenda. Like, I get the business reasons, whatever, you know, we want to, apparently for some reason companies want to clamp down on secondhand sales and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And but as a sort of scholar of the art, like, that kind of irritates me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that, and that's not a perspective I'd actually considered, but it's something that a lot of people are kind of worrying about a little bit now we've got all this. And not just downloadable content, like whole downloadable games, that sort of thing. Like Geometry Wars is amazing, but whenever the next Xbox, whatever it's called, comes out, it might be gone. It may vanish. Mm. And are Sony and Microsoft going to make sure all this stuff ports over to the next generation of consoles, or are they going to just say fuck it and leave it be, or what?
Well, we've seen it already with Outrun Arcade, I think it's called. Obviously that was pulled from XBLA and PSN because essentially Sega's license with Ferrari ran out. And now that's not an issue with Outrun 2006, which is sitting on my shelf right now, but you cannot buy that game now. That is just not accessible. And that's for me, that is a very important game in the evolution of the arcade racer. But, you know, even if tomorrow you wanted to go and buy that game, you wouldn't be able to. You wouldn't be able to experience it. So how are you going to do that? And I think that these are questions that we're not really answering at the moment. We're in that kind of phase where the films was kind of in where you know, people were just kind of chucking these masterpieces on the bonfire because, you know, the films have been watched and who cared about celluloid? You know, film was just this small little thing that no one was going to care about, and people in the film industry would kill to get an original, you know, like an original copy of Metropolis, for example. There isn't an original print left anymore, and we don't know what that's like, but that's an incredibly important part of cinema history. I think that there are games at the moment that we are going to lose if we're not careful, and I think that this DLC thing kind of ties into that. It's all a bit nerdy. I've come onto the TSA podcast, and what I was expecting, because I love the show, what I was expecting was, you know, spabbage this and spabbage that.
Spabbage.
But what I've done is I'm talking about ancient German cinema. Please stop me.
But it's like these are all problems that have been solved on the PC because it's such a much more open platform. And yes, there's the legality of stuff like Abandonware is frequently called into question. But if you want to like skirt the law and know that no one's really going to enforce copyright infringement on a 20-year-old game, then go for it. Sort of like these are issues that like. There are kind of archivists on the PC, but there's no way of doing that on these closed platforms of consoles. What are we going to do? And stuff like if you think like the iPhone as well, we're only within the equivalent of one console generation since it first came into being. But are those games used to go to get games from the original launch of the iOS store where they stay up forever? And were you able to get them, or are they going to vanish? It's a really big issue.
Exactly. And to kind of tie it in with this Batman thing, which is the original point, you know, I think it's obviously, you know, I wouldn't say it's crucial because obviously they've kind of they've built the game to work around people who buy it secondhand and not have that sort of stuff. And that's fine. That's fair. I completely get that. It just smacks a little bit of, like, this is, you know, we kind of take the Arkham series for granted now because, like, you know, we expected that Arkham City was going to be brilliant because Arkham Asylum was. And so to kind of balls it up on something so simple, really.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. That's the other thing with this is they knew that this was going to sell a couple of million copies easily without them really trying. They could have made an awful game and it still would have sold a couple of million copies off the back of Arkham Asylum, and this is meant to be amazing. And to go and sort of go, oh, we need to do this, 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 and this to make more money, and we need to sign all these weird pre-order deals so you get this skin if you go here and this skin if you go here. It's the Batman launch is so odd. It's one of the weirdest I can remember.
I think that's Warner realising what they've got and just trying to milk it for everything they can.
Well, I think it's Warner realising that the only properties they've got that work at the minute are Batman and Mortal Kombat, and that's all that anyone's buying from Warner Games. And that's kind of, it's them going, oh, we need to turn a profit from this division. Batman will sell lots. We can profiteer, basically. It's just a weird thing. Something else that is very weird is Battlefield 3. Peter, you know lots of people more people in the press than I know. You know an awful lot of people. You're very well connected. Do you know anyone who has Battlefield 3 review code? Because I don't.
Thank you. I don't know anybody who's confirmed that they've got the review code. No.
Yeah, see, neither do I, and neither does anyone.
do know someone that's got it, but they haven't confirmed it yet.
I won't name him, but there's one person I know that is very good on Twitter at alluding that they've got something quite exciting, and once in a while it is something genuinely quite exciting, like, you know, Battlefield 3, and then sometimes it's not very exciting and it is a game that no one cares about. I might know one or two people that have got it. I mean, I know some of the guys I know some guys from a couple of different places, and the problem is, like, my connections are kind of website mainly. Yeah. So obviously I would imagine that the magazines have got it, surely.
They must do. Surely. There's no way they can't have it. That would just be crazy.
So when's the game out?
In like a week.
Friday. Tomorrow.
No, it's
Battlefield 3.
Yeah, it's next week. It's next Friday, I think. I think Battlefield 3 is next Friday. And there's an awful lot, even places like GameSpot have said outright, no, we don't have Battlefield 3 review code. And they're I would class them. I don't read them, and I don't know whether or not I would respect them if I read them, but I definitely class them as a big outlet in terms of size. And for places like them not to have it, and I know we're not huge, but like PR aren't even responding to queries about this.
Why is that? Are they worried for low scores? Are they trying to just, or is it this fight with Modern Warfare? They're just,
well, they're doing this weird thing where they say, oh, we there's a patch, a day one patch is being released on Tuesday, and they want to people not to review it till that day one patch is out, which to me sounds like without that patch the game is broken. But that's not really a great excuse for a game that they're spending this much money on, like, promoting, and then going, no, but you can't review it. We'll have you advertise it for like 6 months. But
if it's a patch that's ready for day one, surely it's ready for a review code.
Well, part of my one of my jobs is in the big bad world of making money. I work in kind of PR and marketing and that sort of thing. And this sounds like bollocks, yeah. If I'm perfectly honest
with
you.
Yeah, it does.
So, for example, you sort of said, well, the EA were saying to you that it's, you know, a patch and they don't want people to review it by a certain point. Well, there's this very, very clever word that begins with an E. That means that you can stop websites reviewing a game.
Yeah, exactly.
Or give them a penalty. So the fact that you haven't got pressed gold code yet is a little bit worrying. I'm on EA's mailing list, and they usually send out an email when they, you know, when a game's gone gold, especially a high profile release. And I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, this is very. It's just a. Again, it's just weird. It's.
Do you think that maybe. Maybe, and this is, you know, not to big ourselves up as inverted commas journalists, but maybe EA don't feel they need the media, or they don't need day one reviews and that sort of thing, because ultimately if you think about all of the advertising budget that's going into this game at the moment, it's going to sell itself. It doesn't matter whether or not, you know, TSA or I don't know, 1UP or whoever has got a review out there, because there are certain people who are going to go and buy it anyway. And the people who are sitting on the fence are, you know, who are waiting for a review. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak badly of EA, because I've worked with a lot of the lovely people at EA Press, and I think that they're a lovely bunch of people, but this smacks to me of, whoops, our game's not ready yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, maybe that's just me being a little, that's me putting a tinfoil hat on, I guess.
What else seems really odd about this is that, what's odd with this, and this is, I don't mean this in a weird way, but this is kind of almost what I expect from when Modern Warfare is released. because Activision are notoriously stingy with review code and are really weird about who they give it to. And that's fine, because it's free copies of a game. It's theirs to give out how they want. And I'm not bitching and moaning that, oh, boo-hoo, we don't get code. Like, I don't care. We'll just go buy it and review it a little bit later than everyone else, because that's what we do. But it's kind of like that. This is not what I expect from EA, because their press is normally so good and so tight. And like you said, there is, it may well be the we don't care attitude. We spent X million on advertising this game. This was an interesting point I saw in Game Journals the other day, which was sort of talking about something that Tycho said in Penny Arcade, which was, do reviews matter anymore now that you get such mainstream coverage? Like, yes, reviews can tell you whether or not a game is good, but a big part of review also used to be, hey, there's this game, maybe you should buy it. And now there's no aspect of that, because, like, you know there's this game because companies are spending tens of millions of pounds telling you that this game exists, and for love of God, please know this game exists. Here, have some more screenshots. We know there was some like a day ago, but you probably need some more, right? You need to see some more of this game. You haven't seen any for like 12 hours. Oh, you might forget about us. Which is this really weird attitude. I get so many emails with, and I'm not going to name names, but I get so many emails with asset drops. And I'm like, you gave me asset drops like a week ago. I don't need to run more assets. I'm good, to be honest.
The best ones are, as well, are the ones that are just like, company you've never heard of is releasing this incredible game on PSN. And you're just like, okay, brilliant. I'm just going to, you know, smatter my front cover with all of these images of your Eastern European developed, you know, download only shooter. I love those.
You get them and you're like, how am I on your mailing list? When did that happen?
I don't know if this is too in jokey and businessy for the podcast, but do you get the ones from, I won't mention her name, but she is a lady, and she pretty much every single day sends emails about iPhone apps that you've heard of for the last 2 weeks. Do you get those?
No, I don't get those so much.
Oh, they are absolutely brilliant. They wake me up at 2 a.m. every single morning on my email, and it's always like, the hot new game from no one you've ever heard of is coming out on X, Y, and Z. And it's just like, wow. And also, like, the subject emails are always like, review codes for journalists. Get your games now. Yeah. And it's like, you aren't a real publicity person at all.
The best one I get, and this is not related to games at all, because I work with a radio station, and there's a general one that goes to like all the people in charge of the station, and we get ones that are from PR, from labels. But one of the ones I get all the time is from a label's PR, but the email address is at yahoo.co.uk.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I
think I know who that is.
I'm not even gonna listen to you, because like, I'm gonna delete this email immediately, because if you don't have a real thing, why should I care? Which sounds really snooty, but it just kind of like,
no,
you're not even really making the effort to dress it up and seem like you're a real thing.
Is that Bex?
No, it's not. It's
okay. Never mind.
I can't remember who it is, but I'm just like,
okay.
No, I'm not going to read your email if it's from a Yahoo address. Like, even I wouldn't read an email from a Yahoo address if it was a friend of mine, because I'd be like, why are you using Yahoo? This is 2011. Do people still use Yahoo? Do people use Hotmail? Oh, okay. Seems a bit odd. That was maybe about Battlefield 3.
Wally was guesting on
it. I do apologize. My Skype is a bit fucked.
Wally.
Peter, do you tell us about Imagine, which is this batshit crazy series we that ended up turning into like a 20-minute Twitter discussion between every journalist I know, just kind of ended up throwing stuff in about how crazy this series is.
Okay,
what?
Guys and listeners at home, or while you're walking to work, just imagine for a second that you could be a journalist. Just imagine, just hold that thought for a second. Imagine that you are a journalist. Well, now you totally don't have to, because there's Imagine Journalist from Ubisoft, and I have been playing it, and it is a video game on your DS.
Is that the best you can say? This is this is a video game. They've got that correct.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. So basically, I'm sort of playing it for a forthcoming piece at some point, and I wanted to play it because two reasons, really. One, because it absolutely, the notion of sort of transferring a very everyday occurrence into a video game absolutely fascinates me. So stuff like Farming Simulator and Dustbin Cleaning Sim and, you know, all that sort of stuff, they absolutely fascinate me. So there's that thing. And the other thing is that someone bought it for my birthday. So I decided I'd give it a go. And so I've been playing it. And it is remarkably nothing like journalism. It's wonderful. It's really, really wonderful. So basically, you start off as you play as a girl, which I think is actually pretty forward thinking, Ubisoft.
Oh yeah.
And so you essentially choose a name from, I don't know, literally the most girly names that the French could think of, like Roxy, Sarah, and all sorts, you know. I imagine it was made in France. I don't know. I'm just being xenophobic for the hell of it.
No, everything crazy Ubisoft makes is made in France. They make all their normal stuff is made in Canada, and then all the weird stuff is made in France.
Well, you say normal. I mean, Assassin's Creed. Anyway. Yeah. So they make Rayman, and then they make Imagine Babies. And
they make Imagine Babysitting, which is like the most depressing thing I can think of. It's like, really, you're striving to be a babysitter. Is that's as high as you're going to set the bar?
And the best thing, I think, just on a quick side note, the best thing I think about the Imagine games is I like to see them as kind of, like, the titles are kind of like just warnings from the developers, like, you actually could imagine this instead of buying it. Like, you literally could imagine what it would be like to be a babysitter. You pick this woman, and you pick a name, and I was Michelle, and then basically you join immediately. There's none of this hard graft that we go through, right? Immediately you're working for a newspaper. Okay,
what?
So first of all, reality is not exactly something that's highly prioritized in these games.
So you don't write for some like tiny newsline for like 2 years unpaid.
No, not at all.
Praying that someone notices you.
Not at all. You start working for a newspaper immediately. I should say that there is a training section in which you are at college, and so just beforehand, in which you are taught in journalism school how to take a photo and how to do an interview, which by the way, it turns out is tapping on words that fly out of a woman's face. So basically, they teach you how to do this, and you go straight into a newspaper. And the editor, now, Chris, I know you work hard. I know you're a hardworking guy. But it turns out all you have to do to be an editor is wear a very nice suede jacket and just lean on the desk. Just lean on a desk and wait for the stories to roll in. That's all you have to do. And you can be completely calm and laid back and, yeah, whatever.
You're allergic to suede, don't you?
Oh, fuck. That's why it's so hard. If I could wear suede, I'd be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Because it turns out the suede is anti-stress fabric.
Is there an Imagine Editors where you're just really stressed all the time?
Yeah, and just 100% worried about your own job all of the time.
Yeah.
You work for this kind of newspaper, and they put you on an assignment, and the first assignment that they give you is to go and report on a cat stuck up in a tree. And awesome. so that's kind of, you know, what you need to go and do. And you turn up to the scene, and the first thing you need to do is take photos of the firemen. Now you might think that the game would give you like a video or something like that, which you can take stills from, or something like that, or a little animation, whatever.
Or something even like Pokemon Snap. You remember Pokemon Snap?
Yeah, Pokemon Snap would be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that would be absolutely marvellous, Chris. It's almost like you're a better game designer than the game designers. But instead of a lovely Pokemon Snap or Hakuna Matata, Africa, you know, whatever it is, you know, that sort of a game.
Yes.
Instead of doing that, it's just the exact same badly drawn picture of a very buff fireman with a very nice smile doing poses. And you need to just take a photo when he flexes his muscle.
So like, he's not even saving the cat.
No, he's not even saving the cat. No. So you just tap on the screen when he's flexing his little muscles, and gives you a little cheeky smile, and he's quite nice and stuff like that. So you do that, and that's the photo section done. And then you need to interview someone, and you interview the old woman whose cat it is about the actual, you know, the incident that you're, the high pressure incident that you're covering for a national newspaper. And so basically what happens is, she will start to say things, but she won't say anything. Obviously that would require voice actors. Little speech bubbles come off on different parts of the screen, and you tap them, and that's you capturing quotes, to use in your write up. And then you're judged on that. Accordingly. So it's basically just tapping on the screen for the entire game. There's also another mode, which unfortunately I haven't been able to use. I've got to borrow a friend's DSi to play on it, in which you can do a presentation on the television, but it uses the DSi's front-facing camera.
Oh, okay.
So you're actually in the thing itself.
That at least sounds like vaguely interesting.
Yeah, I mean, don't oversell it.
No.
It's I don't think it's going to be brilliant, but it does. There's also and I shit you not, there is also a mode in which lines of text scroll up the screen and you just read them. And that's teleprompter. That's teleprompter practice. And your microphone picks it up whether or not you've actually said the things that it is. But you can just blow into the microphone to replicate,
because it's just going to be that. It's going to be noise level, they're not going to spend money on, like, voice recognition.
No, so basically, you know, most of my sort of journalism has been tapping on screens and going as words scroll up a screen. It's really, really quite a remarkable title, and I look forward to doing a write-up for it for the lovely people, lovely readers of TSA.
I imagine these games, someone at Ubisoft just sits down at lunch and just goes, got a couple of hours this afternoon, do you want to knock out an Imagine game? Cost like a couple
here, Barry, we need some money to con some little girls out of their money. Any ideas? Yeah, that journalism thing's pretty popular at the moment. Brilliant, that's a bonus for you.
Tried to get one over on all the journalists everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't make you play the stereotypical, you know, overweight ginger beard,
yeah, exactly.
Sex.
Well, that's also, though, as we said last night, the next step from this is clearly Imagine game development, and then Ubisoft are sorted forever.
Exactly. Well, you know, we were sort of saying on Twitter, like, that, you know, what you could do is you know you could sort of graduate from being an Imagine journalist to an, you know, and then completely sell all of your values and want to go and get some money and then become a Imagine game developer, and just create the shit that you were having a go at beforehand. And I think that would be some sort of amazing, wouldn't it? But I do wish that I'd been able to review it at the time it came out, because it's actually a couple of years old now, because I think that would be the most meta review ever, because you know, like, Ubisoft must have been just absolutely rubbing their hands going, ha, 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 we'll show you. Absolutely brilliant. No, so I'm plugging away at that at the moment and thoroughly enjoying myself.
Oh, right. That I just imagine you're going to try and write that up by like pouring at your screen and hoping something happens as a consequence.
Basically, I just sort of like, what you do is you just curl your hand into a fist and just hammer on the keyboard. Just hammer away at it.
And eventually, and then hopefully there's an article. Oh. I also have to find... It's when you said she goes to get the cat. I was like, I went, well, in my head, this is a national paper. But I imagine realistically, this is like a local paper. And you're like, no, and you're doing this for a national paper. I'm pretty sure the last time I picked up like The Guardian, there wasn't cat stuck in tree.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I suppose to be fair to Ubisoft, the problem is, you know, the game is aimed at a young market, and I suppose stuff like that is much better than asking, you know, 12-year-old reporter Lucy to go out and photo Gaddafi murdered in a street. topical humor there. Yeah, that dates this, doesn't it? If you're listening in the future, by the way, in 2 years' time, Gaddafi died today. How fucked up is that? How messed up? But hello, future people. You know, you'll probably be too busy driving around on your hoverboard to worry. So enjoy that.
Granted stole this part of the show. We'll be right back.
Alright, moving on from crazy Imagine games. I read the new Justice League book that came out yesterday. Hooray, more comics. And it was brilliant because the end of the last issue was selling it and went, yeah, the next one is Batman versus Superman. Big Batman versus Superman fight. And the book starts, and it doesn't, as you would imagine, from that cliffhanger, does not start with the Batman versus Superman fight. No, it's like, okay, well, we're going to go see the Flash, but he's not being the Flash at the minute. He's doing his day job, so he's working in the crime lab. And so you just kind of, well, this is mildly tedious. This isn't particularly exciting as introduction to a book. And then it goes to the Batman Superman fight. And basically, the Batman Superman fight is Superman going, well, you've used up all your gadgets already, so you don't see any of the fight. It's just Superman basically going, you used up all your gadgets, and they did fuck all, didn't they? What you could do now? Because in the new rebooted DC continuity, Superman's kind of a dick. And then, to be fair, there was actually a fight after that, but at no point does Batman actually fight Superman, which was a bit frustrating. And then Flash turns up and stuff happens, and that book is so clearly going... The first issue was kind of like, okay, look, we're setting stuff up. And then the second issue was still setting stuff up. And the next issue introduces Wonder Woman. So that's three issues of them setting stuff up. And stuff, a plot is developing, but I'm kind of sick of them setting stuff up already.
But, I mean, I suppose this is the problem, isn't it? Because when... And I'm unfortunately quite out of comics at the moment. I read graphic novels once in a while, you know, and nothing but Alan Moore, darling. But
well, so everything's absolutely insane, and
yeah, basically, and everything is little girls having sex and anarchism in the UK. From what I understand about the Silver Age, I want to say,
yeah,
you know, when everything was kind of kicking off, starting out, when those comics first started, they weren't really setting the universe up. All of that origin stuff tended to be either inferred, you know, much, much later on and looked back on and gone, oh, well, weren't comics really, really clever and they were really doing all this deep, meaningful stuff, even though arguably it was really more that kind of really seriously kicked that, made that a legitimate art form. But, you know, when Superman started off, there weren't really origin stories. He wasn't really doing that. It was just, here is a serial about a man who is very, very strong and he is also an alien.
Yeah.
And so now that DC, from what I understand, have basically, you know, they've done a, Crisis on Infinite Earths, in that they've kind of just stopped it all and just started it again.
Yeah.
It's now, because comics have grown up, they feel like they have to have these origin stories, and they have to build things up. And I suppose that must be very awkward for a writer, because what they really want to do is get Superman out there and fighting shit all of the time. But they have to kind of set up all of this. Well, this is his origin story in this universe, and this is what he's doing here. And with JLA, you've got so many backstories to worry about that it must be very, very difficult. So are they quite, I mean, Chris, do you want more punching? Is that what you want?
Ideally, I'd just like someone to hit someone a lot.
Okay.
But it's just kind of like, what's really weird is like the Flash has his own book and Superman has his own book, and they're not doing any of these origin stories in their own books. They've gone, what if we just put them all in Justice League, and then the other books can be hitting people a lot? And I'm kind of, well, great, all the other books are hitting people a lot, but Justice League should... To an extent,
people punching lots more people.
But kind of, I'd be happy if they'd gone, here's how they all get together. But they just seem to be, they're doing something Marvel's done a lot recently, which is really, really decompressing their stories. The only upside that happens in DC, as though they're decompressing the story, there is at least a lot happening. So you're kind of like, okay, Justice League is this really decompressed story. Like, we're 2 issues in, and I think about 40 minutes has transpired, overall. But there's lots of stuff going on in Justice League. At least there's, like, at least 3 or 4 different stories being told at the same time. So, like, okay, well, I can sort of get on board with this. You keep jumping back and forth, which is why you're not actually making any progress in any one of these stories. All I've managed to establish is the government do not like superheroes. That's about as far as I've got with Justice League. There's brilliant stuff in all the other books. All the other ones are fantastic. But Justice League is just kind of like, but the government think they're bad. This was 5 years ago. There you are. That's pretty much it.
Are you using the phrase Justice League to be cool? Because isn't it Justice League of America?
It's just called, the new book is just called Justice League.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. Which
is it still... Is it still drawn by Morrison?
No, it's Jim Lee's drawing it at the minute, which is actually nice.
Okay.
I like Jim Lee's art, so you've got really pretty art, but it's not... I think it's Geoff Johns is writing it, and it's just not particularly good, and I don't know. They're doing fantastic stuff in all the other places. And you are also right, it's weird it's not called Justice League of America, because there's a Justice League International book. I guess they're kind of, because there's also a Justice League Dark book, so I guess they're going like, this is the main original Justice League, and there's these other ones that spin off of it, but this is the real one, to make it very clear.
Justice League International, it makes it sound like Tintin's gonna pop up at
school. Justice League International is written like an early 90s comic and is pitched at roughly 8-year-olds, so Tintin might actually turn up. It
wouldn't that
surprise
be absolutely
me.
Absolutely amazing. Just like we've got to go and find the unicorn, and then Superman just blasts through the side of the fucking wall like the, you know, like he just like does a he just like comes crashing through, and he's like, I got your fucking unicorn for ya. It'd be amazing.
Oh, that would be amazing.
We've got to get to the moon, Snowy. I've been to the moon. I've got a motherfucking base on the moon. Brilliant.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
They get to the unicorn and Joker's just give it a dial.
Poor unicorn. He thought it was a magical beast, but it's been cut from ear to ear. That's terrible. Poor old unicorn. But to be honest, he shouldn't have been in the East End of London, should he? No. Brilliant.
Unicorn's name.
Right.
Unicorns don't go nay. They can't, can they? I think all unicorns can talk, I think. Yeah. According to Wikipedia, that's... certainly I've
maybe
never
they say it. Nay, you know, like we would. We go, nay. You know, if like you come across a unicorn, they'd be like, right, let's ease them into it. And they go, nay.
Or maybe they're all like, maybe they're all like 1800 American senators, and like they're all voting on stuff, and they're like, no. Maybe that's what it is.
I think my phone has just fixed itself.
Yeah,
this could be monumental. I'll keep you updated.
Okay, breaking news.
So
stage six at the moment. It never got past one of six.
I'm so excited, Lewis.
I know.
I've literally got an erection right now. It's terrible.
Boy, I'm finished. I'm cleaning up.
Oh.
Who am I lying? I don't clean up.
Oh God. So Peter, when I said to Lewis, when you were coming on, I said, "All right, don't worry, Peter's going to fill in. You'll like him. He's a very, very smart bloke, very thoughtful, that kind of thing." And that we're talking about erections and Tintin Superman.
Are you sure the OMM podcast is the best place for a clever and thoughtful person?
It's totally fine. I mean, erections are an important part of life, and we should we should embrace
them.
Not like that, obviously. I don't want to,
but when you're going through a bit of a dry spell, you've got to grab what you can, really, haven't you?
You've got to, haven't you? And if an erection is the only nearby object that you can grab hold of, I mean,
it's inappropriate for your dad to be standing there like that, but
well, exactly. But we're going through an economic crisis, Lewis, and what are people doing? They're spending less money on entertainment. Don't worry about it. Try and fix your phone or listen to this podcast again. Get that erection on and just go for your life.
And to be fair, I do also make money from it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Win situation.
And now that you've cleaned up, now that you wipe yourself on the nearby curtain.
I don't clean myself.
Oh, right, of course. No, sorry. That's gentlemen don't do that, do they?
No.
People to do it for them.
Yeah. Mm. Put them in the bath next, I'll just think, it's a bit cloudy.
Mm. Oh, fuck's sake. Right. Next, Lewis, the movie competition. I just have to move on. there's no way to recover from that. So yeah, movie competition.
Okay, let me just get myself prepared here. This is the intermission. Where have you gone, you motherfucker? Is it gone?
It's just like listening to it at home.
Yeah, we don't cut anything. It's exactly the same. It's just like, I could cut this out when we were waiting. Whatever.
Now, the problem is, whenever I listen to the podcast again, I'm going to start talking to you guys, and then you're just going to talk over me, and I'm just going to think, that's rude.
the problem is, Peter, because you're other Peter, he wasn't on earlier last week, and he said he was listening back to it, and he didn't like it because he couldn't join in. He kept trying to join in, and it didn't work. Right, have you found your competition entries, Lewis?
I don't know what's happened.
Oh my goodness!
I know what I did.
What'd you do?
Played it off my phone's iTunes library, didn't I?
There's no phone
station. I'm looking on my iPad and I don't have the correct bit of music. So last week I played you a bit of music that went a bit like, how did it go? It went do 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 do
do do do do do. It's haunting.
And that was, of course, from Lord of the Rings.
Lovely.
The Welsh version.
Yes. Lord of the Gogogog. And I have received 8 correct entries.
My gosh.
Peter.
Hi.
Would you mind choosing me a number between 1 and 8, decimal points, no pies, no square roots, no divisions, no fractions, just a whole number between 1 and 8.
Okay, I'm going to pick number 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
What do I win?
you win a
Tech or Granite stole this part of the show. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, it's not very clear in this next bit what we're talking about, so I just want to make it clear. We picked the winner, and it was Cerebok. So yeah, because obviously we lost a bit of the podcast there, because as some of you regular listeners will know, my computer's a bit of a fuck-up, and due to having to use Skype and mixing and matching different audio sources, everything went a bit funny at this bit of the podcast, so we kind of lost a couple of minutes. So yeah, when we come back, we talk about Cerebok, and we're talking about how they won. So I now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Cerebok. Oh no, they're Cerebok on the six axis. Their name is Joachim Mon, but then there's also Tobias thrown in there as well, so take your pick really.
So they're sort of getting to the stage where they're going to evolve, but the player's tapping B and not really sure if they want to.
Yes, pretty much.
Okay, well, congratulations to number seven. I picked that for you. So well,
you got Peter, thanks.
Yeah,
excellent.
And Chris, could you pick a number between 1 and 7?
4.
4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Ah, is the incredible Four Lions.
What's that?
Ah, the Chris Morris film by the British Muslims. Decide they're going to blow up something. But it's like the
excellent,
brilliant film.
Yeah. You'll enjoy that.
Genuinely, it's funny. So I will be sending that to you all the way in Sweden, because it will only be like 20p extra to get to there. It is down to you, unfortunately, to be able to play it. I don't know what your systems are.
Sweden,
in there.
It should
Europe,
be the,
so it should work.
Yeah, it's the same region, isn't it?
But you know, the Scandinavians there.
Yeah, weird. Have to put it together themselves, you know.
Yeah.
DVD player comes in bits, comes flat pack.
Very good at furniture.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah,
casual xenophobia, guys. Casual
it's,
xenophobia.
It's excellent. That's the way you do it. It's racist slurs that might or might not be true. Who knows?
It's all right.
They're
it's
all true.
But, you know,
there was an excellent article I read the other day, though, which was Belgium. True. What does anyone have any like xenophobic opinions on Belgium? There doesn't seem to be anyone.
Chocolate. Yeah, that's right.
They don't know if they're French or German.
Sure.
That's true. That's about. It's not the, to the extent of other countries, you know. Not
they
to the
speak
extent.
French. Not their to, flag is the German flag, just like turned upside down.
But not to the extent of like you say. Everyone's very laid back and stoned, and you know you mean Holland. But yeah, who knows?
I love the way that we all just agreed on that.
Yeah, exactly. Just instantly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
sure.
Dutch. Oh, the Dutch. I see.
Yeah.
Under Kevin's,
Kev's.
Under Kev's new rules, we'll give a shout out
to all the people who got it right.
Jason Jones Lacrosse, well done. Chris Armstrong, whose reply, whose answer said, about this week's music podcast competition, and it sounds like he's about to accuse me or judge me on something. It's like, about this week's podcast question, I think it's shit, is what I expected. It to be
sure, called. Yeah.
That is Muggsy Ballone, Chris Armstrong. And he also says his birthday is on November the 15th, which makes him a Scorpio. He's 5'10", good sense of humour, and he likes long walks on the beach. Actually, that last bit was a lie. I fucking hate the beach. All sandy with seaweed and crabs. Have you ever had sex on the beach? It's like wearing sandpaper. Nightmare. Chris, thank you for entering. Please don't enter again. next up, we have Ralph Thompson, who is RHT992 on TSA. He has a question as well, which we will ask later on. Also, congratulations to Jason Mitchell, who is Kev's work colleague.
Yes.
You don't have any other types of colleagues. They're work colleagues. Josh Clayton, who won last week's. So he also got this week's right. And did Mr. Shade, who is Rimjaw. So well done to all of you people.
Hmm.
Oh, and this week's competition is, line it up, bish, bash, bosh, turn you up, done and done. Okay, this week's piece of music. If you know which film this was most famously used in, then I'll tell you how to enter afterwards. Okay. If you know what film that's, like I say, most famously used in, then you need to send your name, your answer, your full address, and no particular subject line to is it Lewis? Yeah, it's lewisgaston@screendemon.com. Mm. And you could win a doovd.
Lewis, you've been watching Miles Needs Moms. This animated CGI stuff.
Yes, I watched
computers I hear it's the future. These computers and stuff. I hear they're the future.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's remarkable what they can do with computers these days. You can even like type on it and it
shit.
The font and you can change the colour of text.
Man, that's fucking mental.
There's a thing called Comic Sans.
Oh, everything should be in Comic Sans.
Everything is in Comic Sans at school. It's the one thing that pisses me off more than anything else.
I can imagine Peter, the other Peter, real Peter, would just explode.
Oh,
if everything was in Comic Sans.
Every time I get given a job to write something, I always do it in like, they don't even let you have like Vidana or anything like that. So I do it in that, and then it's got to be Comic Sans. A study says that children recognize Comic Sans. It's like, fuck off.
Helvetica. Children. Should all be in Helvetica.
Yeah. Oh, but anyway, yes, I went and watched Miles Needs Mums because it was part of a school trip. And to be honest with you, I was walked in expecting it to be really shit. And it wasn't. I actually thought it was very good. Motion capture and produced by Robert Zemeckis, who seems to be behind every single motion capture thing since Polar fucking Express. But he's the producer of it, and it does exactly what it says on the tins. Children of Mars are without parents, so they need a strict guardian. They search Earth, find a strict mother, and abduct her.
Oh, fair enough.
And then a son goes up there as well and tries to save her. I thought it was going to be shit, but it's actually quite enjoyable. It's really funny. There's lots of stuff in there that adults will enjoy, as well as it being quite fun and busy for the kids as well. It's like there's one particular conversation about the boy tries feeding his cat broccoli, and then the cat's sick. And his mum's like, "What are you doing? You're trying to poison the cat." And he's like, "Well, if broccoli poisons the cat, why are you feeding it to me?" She's like, "No, it won't poison you. It poisons the cat." And he's just like arguing that the cat's not happy. A very good react, but just a lot funnier than I can.
I could imagine that being amusing in my head.
It is mildly racist when they get to Mars.
Well, about Martians or like about black people?
About black people.
That's odd.
The reason they need mums is because the Martians are ruled by like a dictator female who has banished every single male to the sort of ghettos of Mars, if you like. And all of those males have weirdly taken on a tribal look compared to
Jesus.
Well-dressed.
Oh God, this does sound really racist.
Yeah, it's like they've even got dreadlocks and everything.
Oh,
and they're
Jesus,
dancing.
Oh God.
And they're all cruising down the Mars Canyon, listening to hip hop.
Yeah, that's what when the boy first arrives there, they're all dancing in the canyon.
Please be joking.
Nope, they're all dancing.
Oh God,
doing like tribal dances.
Oh God, this is so racist.
Does one of them shout "I love orange soda" at one point?
One of them sat in the corner with a bucket of fried chicken.
Man.
Yeah, so that,
Jesus.
That
this sounds really racist for a kids' film.
It is. Like, they've like the people up top. You know, the ones that are actually in the buildings and with all the technology. They can be normal. The ones in the ghettos, they have to be black. Yeah. If Martians could be black, they would be it.
Jesus.
In the end, the Rastas win the day. They overthrow the tyrannical sort of matriarch.
Is that due to Martin Luther King? Or?
Good one.
Thank you.
But yeah, it's and there's the I don't know if it's because we're with the kids, and obviously where we're a special school, a lot of them come from broken homes, troubled homes, or have been completely abandoned. And obviously with a film like Mars Needs Mums, it's all about, oh, mums are brilliant and parents are brilliant, and it's great to come from a loving family.
and your kids are going, yeah. Well, your kids are going, can't relate to this.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the cinematic masterpiece of going, no, no, no.
Aaron, who the kid that I mainly look after, decided that he was going to storm out. So that was interesting.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. This film is racist. I did look over it towards the ending because there's quite a sad bit. You know, every film has to be.
Oh, yeah. Obviously.
You know, every child's animated film, you know, like, if there's not one heartbreaking moment that will change your life forever, then it's just a failure.
Yeah.
And I looked over and like a couple of the kids were, you know, there's a fly in my eye. No, you're crying. Grow up. I really liked it. It's got some good acting. It's got Seth Green as the boy. Do you know, I think what she's in now. She's in loads of things.
So she's in loads of things, but you can't think of one of them.
Marvelous.
It's one of those. Oh, motherfucker. This is really good for the podcast. Bear with me.
Why don't you just look it up?
Let me look. It's also the evil Martian lady is played by Bran from Austin Powers, you know, that little one.
Oh yeah.
She plays the motion capture animation and everything's really, really well done. And like I say, it's got a bit in there for adults as well, but it was far better than I thought it was ever gonna be. And I haven't reviewed it because it's fairly old, I think, now as well.
Yeah.
But I would probably give it 4.
That's cool. And talking of motion capture animation, and obviously to bring things back to Tintin, which is obviously the core of this podcast, is Tintin. Sure. I was watching that trailer the other day, the new one, and the motion capture in that is insane. Like, I knew it was good, but I didn't realize just how good, and it's absolutely crazy. It looks amazing.
Yeah, Jackson and Spielberg, because it's Spielberg's the first one, Jackson's the second one, and then they're co-directing the third one, aren't they?
Well, Jackson sort of worked on the first one, but he was busy doing other projects. But I heard apparently they custom built this video conferencing rig for him. But it meant that he was hooked up to the tannoy. So anytime Peter Jackson was giving instructions, it was just like God was speaking. Because he was just everywhere booming from the tannoy.
He's a bit weird. I remember watching one of the extras on King Kong, one of the making of things. And it was. At the time, he was crossing over between finishing up on the Lord of the Rings trilogy and starting, or was in full swing of King Kong as well. So I'd imagine that he was extremely busy at the time, and he was also starting to lose weight and whatever as well. Mm. And he got to, you know, the bit in King Kong where they're running away from the dinosaurs along the cliff edge? You haven't
vaguely
seen the remake of King Kong, have you?
I refuse to watch the remake of King Kong because it looked silly and wasn't in black and white.
Oh, no, it's brilliant. I mean, you can after the first time, you can ignore the first hour, and if you just close your eyes and imagine Jack Black's not in it, then it's actually really enjoyable. But there's a scene in it where they run away from dinosaurs, the making of it was covering this scene, and Peter Jackson turns up, gets in a chair, and like he's phoned Bryan Singer to come in. So Bryan Singer is like flown in by private jet and everything, and he greets him, and then Peter Jackson falls asleep in an armchair. So Brian Singer's just like, I'll take over for a little bit. So Brian Singer like starts directing the scene where they run away from the dinosaurs. I was like, Peter Jackson, I'm not entirely sure that is responsible.
Yeah.
But yeah. That woman is Joan Cusack, John Cusack's brother, sister. And she is, if that doesn't ring any bells, the name. She, I'm just trying to look for one that you may know. You'll know it. You know School of Rock?
Yes.
She is the uptight teacher that he gets drunk.
Oh, okay, yeah.
From the glasses.
Yeah, I think I know you mean.
And is in High Fidelity.
Oh, yeah, I love High Fidelity.
John Cusack's sister.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean. Awesome. Awesome.
So, she's the mum, and she's really good. So, yeah, that's me about Marsley's mum's done.
Cool. Peter, you've been playing... Is this point and click or something, this trauma thing, is it?
Have you never heard of it?
No, I've never heard of it.
Have you never heard of trauma? No. I hadn't heard of trauma until it was available as part of the Humble Indie Bundle, which is now sadly finished.
Can you take pictures of firemen?
You cannot take pictures of firemen.
Not interested.
Well... Okay, well then that's gonna keep this a very short. Trauma is from it's basically made by one person, a guy called Christian Majewski, and he's a games designer, I suppose. He's very interested. The emphasis is very much on design rather than game. It's a point and click, and the idea is that you are a woman suffering from amnesia, and it's all played in the first person, and it's all still images. So if you've played Myst or Riven or any of those old point and click, a couple of the Zork games when they were, you know, picture based and stuff, it's very much like that. But it's kind of the next evolution of that adventure style that's largely kind of died out, unfortunately. And the idea is that before you were in a car accident, which is how you got amnesia, you were a photographer. I think you're an art student, but your main device is your camera, and each photo that you move through that kind of makes this world is supposed to be a photo that you've taken with your mind.
Wait. With your mind.
Yes, basically. So you know how you can sometimes people talk about they remember things in absolute clear detail as if it's a photo, like a photographic memory, for example. So it's kind of like that. And
that makes more
essentially
sense.
I'm not explaining myself very well. Yeah, there are basically four scenes, and you go through each of these scenes to kind of unravel, not really stuff about the story, though you can infer a lot of, from the objects and images that you find in the game, but you kind of find out a little bit more about this character, and it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. It's currently free to play. If you want, you can go to traumagame.com and you can play it in your browser right now. Not right now, but later on. Definitely note it down and then go and play it. So you can play it like that, and it's basically the full game. Or you can do something rather wonderful and go and support the developer. And you can buy it directly from his website, or you can go to Steam and download it, which is how I got it. So what I absolutely love about it is it's very deliberately... it's very deliberately artistic. It's meant to be, you know, it's meant to be one of these art games, but it's but it's all sort of color images and streaks of light, you know, creating color across, you know, a landscape, that sort of thing. Weird environments, like what seem like very normal environments, and then they turn extremely strange. So you'll see a sculpture in the middle of a town square, for example, and stuck underneath it is a bear, teddy bear, and you need to figure out how to get that bear out. And you move around the scene, kind of like clicking left or right, and you kind of move around this boulder, and then you find an image, and then you zoom into that image, and that image has a swipe mark. And so basically the way that you can move around is you click and drag down the screen, almost like Okami, and that gesture does something different within the game world. So that gesture means move backwards. And because you haven't learnt this before, but when you move all the way backwards, you realize that there are actually more of these sculptures littered about, and it's actually blocking this area off. And there's a specific image on that as well that you can then, you know, trace and do something interesting with. You know, these symbols have power, basically. And then you can use that symbol on the original, and then you can get the teddy bear. That's that. So it's very artistic, and there are game elements like that. But it's meant to be kind of an experience which you move through and you try and interpret as best as you can.
You do know there are games where you can just shoot things.
Oh right, okay. What do you do in those?
You just kind of like aliens, they get in the way of your bullets and then they're dead. It's pretty right, simple.
Do these aliens have complex motives and emotional sort of drama within the games?
Pretty much, they're just aliens most of the time.
Right. Okay. Are there any black and white scenes with moody music over the top of it?
Not that I can think of. There should be more games with black and white scenes in. I would play. There should be a black and white scene in Gears of War 3. It would just been really. It would have fucked with everyone's head.
Yeah. I know I've been talking about weird games, and I do understand this.
I'm just taking the piss.
I was sitting on my shelf right. Well, for example, one of my favorite games, and this is a bit weird, but one of my favorite games, I shit you not, is 50 Cent Blood on the Sand.
Oh, I've heard that's really good though. I really want to play it.
That game is the best average game ever made. And it is completely unlike the sort of stuff that I'm, you know, believe is moving the genre forward. And it's nothing like that, but it's just a brilliant game. But recently I've kind of been playing these weird and arty games. We won't talk about it today, but I've also been playing Dreamfall, The Longest Journey. So that kind of puts you in the mind space that I'm in at the moment. But this Trauma game it's really interesting because it's very short. It's like about it took about half an hour for me to complete, and I mean it's about £5 or £6 if you want to go and buy it. But that half an hour has really stuck with me. Like the every single scene in that game is just burned into my memory now. Like I will not forget how I completed mission 2, for example. You know, to catch a ghost. Essentially, I had to catch a ghost. That was what I had to do. And that's what I did. And I will never forget how I did it. And it's marvelous. And what I really love is the vision of this one person. And we kind of see all these indie games, you know. I was arguing with somebody about it earlier on Twitter today about what an indie game was. But we see all these like indie games, and we see them all on XBLA and PSN and all that sort of stuff. And it's wonderful that you can have these smaller games now, but really we've now just got smaller companies. You know, it's not, unless you're kind of in the mobile space, it really isn't one or two people making a game that's their vision and then giving it to a load of people. That's not the rule of thumb. So to go and play Trauma has been really refreshing, because it is really, really just this one person's idea of what a point and click can be. So I really do hope that you guys go and play. If you don't want to pay anything for it, then yeah, as I say, traumagame.com, go and try it out and see if you like it. But it's really short, it's really affecting, and it's basically the sort of highest evolution of the point and click right now. And I think that it's kind of wonderful.
Sorry, did you say it was on PS3 and Xbox or not yet?
No, it never. No, this game never will be. No, it's on Steam, and you can download it directly from the guy's website, and you can play it for free on his website as well.
Just looking at traumagame.com as we speak. Yeah.
It is marvelous.
Wow, is that the art style of it?
Yes.
That looks like. I'm sorry. If you've said this, if you've explained this already, and I've just not listened, or it's not.
No, fun. No.
But those pictures look like it's actual models.
Yeah. It's kind of photos and models and very, very high intensity CGI, like extremely high definition. And it's also mixed in with real life CGI videos, you know, like filming people essentially. Live action word, phrase. And it's kind of like mixed media project, which I really like about it. It's so worth seeing, and I'm really glad I kind of took a risk on it. I'm really interested to see where this guy goes next. I hear he's making another game at the moment, but I can't find any information about it. But I'm desperate to see what he's going to do,
because I know it's probably not on the same scale. I don't really know, but that's what always. I haven't played it yet, but it always fascinates me that Minecraft has been such a success, and that was just one person.
Yeah,
on their own.
We look at stuff like Braid as well, and those kind of games, where it's one person's vision just executed incredibly well.
Yes. Sorry, I've just started the try it online. I didn't mean to. I'm not just being rude.
No. I mean, I'm not a huge
music,
fan.
It's Sorry. Amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's just
save that for later, I think.
It's just stunning. That's all right. There you go.
Anyone listening should also try the game Peter made, which is called Soldier.
Peter, what?
This Peter.
This Peter.
Yeah, made game.
This Peter.
It's called Soldiers of Dreamers, and I played it, and I was.
Where can I play that?
You can play it on inretrospectpodcast.com/soldiersaredreamers. Weirdly, Trauma is basically the game I was trying to make but didn't know I was trying to make it. It's a lot like that. If you've played that, which you probably haven't because it's a very small project done for my label. But as I say, Trauma, absolutely brilliant. It's free, so you've got no excuse. It'll run on basically anything. My laptop's awful, and it ran beautifully on that. And you should support him because it is the good thing to do.
Because you asked me after I finished playing Soldiers of Dreamers, you said, well, did you finish it? I said, I don't know, maybe. Does Trauma have the same effect in that you're not really sure? I mean, is there a definitive goal?
It is a surprisingly similar experience to Soldiers of Dreamers, but Trauma has much more. There are sort of definitive gameplay mechanics in it rather than Soldiers of Dreamers, which totally doesn't. Trauma is a million times better than what I produced. Like, mine was, you know, super low budget, and I had no idea about what I was doing with games design and that sort of thing. But Trauma is made by a person who clearly knows how to make a brilliant, brilliant game, and has decided, instead of, you know, doing a top down shooter or whatever it is, you know, or a moody platformer, they've actually gone ahead and decided to try and revolutionize the way that point and clicks work. And I think that largely Christian is successful, and I'm desperate to try and get an interview with him now because I really want to talk to him about kind of his thoughts on the genre and try and get into the mindset of that person.
Soldiers Are Dreamers is downloading.
Oh, goodness.
It's good, but it's very weird.
It's not right.
I liked it, but it's very, very weird.
Yes.
It's very...
I like weird games.
It's very confusing. I'm not really sure you could call it... Could you call it a game? It's definitely an experience.
If you like.
You interact with it, but...
Yeah,
there's a question of do games have to have objectives or not, which is a bit of a big question to ask when we're an hour and a half into a 2-hour podcast. I'm not sure.
Any,
I'm not sure. Are there objectives, Peter? I wasn't sure.
Well, this is the thing. I didn't want to. I don't really want to give it my own interpretation. Like, that's kind of when I was interviewed for Joystick about it, which was really nice. And I basically didn't want to give my interpretation there, and I'm not too keen on giving my interpretation now. But basically, if the experience that you have with it is completely 100% valid, that's what I will say. It'll be interesting to hear your thoughts on it. But
I've just looked at the credits as well, and I want to formally put my name in there if you ever want asking help or ideas, because
boom. Really, let's do it. We'll talk off camera, darling. We'll talk off camera. We'll do it.
Right. Well, I've got more things on this here list, but we're running exceptionally. We're like an hour and a half into a 2-hour podcast. So let's get. I was angry about Fear Itself. Me and Peter played Hardlines. It's really good, but I can't beat his score in Snake. And Lewis finished Rage.
I did, and the ending shit.
There we are.
No.
There you are. The ending to Rage is bad.
The ending was just a huge disappointment.
Chris, very quickly, what's Fear Itself?
Fear Itself is the Marvel Comics event that has just, well, was supposed to wrap up this week, and then Marvel went, what if there was an epilogue? And then the epilogue was like 3 books, and then the epilogue was actually, they went, because originally the epilogue, they went, right, it's going to be a 7-issue series, and we're fine, that's quite long, but I'll buy more. And they went, by the way, there's a 3-issue epilogue, and I was like, okay, that's fine. And they went, also, then we're creating 3 spin-off series from this book that are also epilogues. I'm like, you can't have entire series as an epilogue.
They've gotcha, Lewis.
Chris, even. Lewis, very. I want to hear about Rage as well. I know that we've got to go really quickly.
I'm downloading Soldiers of Dreamers, and the Windows bar has just popped up. And this is probably insulting to you, but it says soldiersofdreamers.exe is not commonly downloaded and could harm your computer.
It is not commonly downloaded. It's only by the coolest of cool cats. Lewis, is Rage basically Quake in the desert?
I've never played Quake.
Okay. Is it Doom in the desert?
I've never played Doom. It's Doom. I've seen Doom and I know of Doom. I've never
played
it.
You know of Doom. Okay.
It's Doom in a wasteland with ultra sexy HD graphics. No, actually, that's a lie. It's not Doom. It's not. The shooting parts of Doom. And then there's a bit more sort of. I want to say RPG, but not necessarily RPG. So, there are like RPG-esque elements.
So the shooting parts of a shooter, which are probably, I'm just going out on a limb here.
No, because I think a shooter is doing it a disservice. Yes, it does have great shooting sections, but there's also sort of racing missions, not missions, but like races you can do. There's trading, there's mini games. It's like a bridge between an FPS and an RPG.
Excellent. So it's kind of like if you Fallout's an RPG, certainly.
Yeah, so it's the definite bridge between. It doesn't have as in depth RPG elements as Fallout, but it's not just a shooter. It's a mixer of the two.
That sounds faintly interesting.
But like I say, I really enjoyed it, and it is a really sexy looking game, apart from the annoying texture pop up. But the ending, I just thought was an absolute letdown for it. It's just not ruined it, but it did make me think, well, that was pants.
Oh, I found out why there's texture popping and stuff. It made this mental decision that no matter what, the game would run at 60 FPS. So they just turn stuff off if it's going to dip below 60 FPS. They're like, just turn high res textures off for a bit and be all right.
One of those things that was annoying at times, like you did think, oh, that's a bit lazy. Other times it was actually quite endearing. and then other times.
I could tell you were trying to make a good, you tried hard. Is this you spent too much time with the kids at school? You're just like, you're doing your best.
No, this triple
multi-million pound budget game is it's trying its best. Bless it. Bless it.
I forgot to press record.
Oh, Lewis, don't tell me that.
I did.
All right. Well, I can salvage this probably.
Okay.
That's a good phrase. Salvage.
Apologies to anyone listening to this. This will be really low quality now. Hooray. all right. So I'll do my best to stitch together my Skype.
That's because you went straight into it. You didn't do all the checking beforehand.
Yeah.
Right.
We've done 40 of them now. I assumed you would remember to press record. all right. Quiz time. Lewis, do you want to hit record now where we can kind of switch into a nicer bit? It'll be like Rage. We'll switch into high res audio halfway through.
Okay. The other thing about that texture was when you are racing, because your car goes so fast, it doesn't bother doing any of it. It's just like you're driving past it anyway. It's not like you're going to be looking at it.
Well, so basically, they just gone, ah, fuck it. It's just an empty desert when you're driving. Yeah. Fuck it, whatever.
It looks like rock. Who cares?
Oh, John Carmack's amazing.
That was quite funny.
All right.
What? You paid 50 quid for this and you want the fucking textures? Get out.
Do you think they're taking it back to like the original PC games development? You have to like go and get the high res textures later.
I think they're taking the piss. That's what they're doing.
Right, Lewis, are you recording now?
Oh no.
God, I just told you to record.
I know, I'm sorry.
He's a one.
Oh, Lewis.
Right.
I'm recording, Chris.
Well done, Peter.
Okay, I am now Thanks. Recording.
Right. I think the bits that are missing from my Skype audio are all Peter's bits anyway, so it just...
Yeah, I talk a lot.
Perfect.
Okay. This week's quiz is actually from the Lone Steven.
Do I need a pen?
Yes.
Okay.
He kindly sent one in, so I thought, right, why not, you know? I'll do it. So it is 1 to 20.
Okay.
And they are quotes from films and games.
Oh, Jesus.
You can have a point for the person who said the quote and a point from the...
Oh, Christ, all right.
The, whatever it's from.
Do you want the person as in character or person as an actor?
No, the character.
Okay.
So 1 to 20... like I say, they're quotes from films and games. So question one is, welcome to prime time, bitch. Question two, it costs $400,000 to fire it for exactly 12 seconds. Number three, swooping is bad. Number four, a man chooses... a slave obeys. Question five. Mother believed this world was irredeemable, but she was wrong, father.
Hmm.
Question six. No, I am your father. Question seven. But more importantly, his soul and now my soul is saying it wants to stop you. Wow, there's a script writer right there. Number eight doesn't actually have an answer. It just says, do a barrel roll.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Okay. Number nine, war. War never changes. Question 10, here's Johnny. Question 11, don't. Question 12. Bunch of slack-jawed faggots around here. This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus, just like me.
Is that my dad?
Oh, he does roar a lot.
I imagine it actually just says Peter's dad.
Yeah, Peter's dad.
Mr. Willett. Is that your surname?
No.
Wilkington.
Wilkington? No, it's not Wilkington. How dare you? How dare you?
It begins with a W.
It certainly does.
Mr. W.
Mr. Senior. W.
A Willington.
Get on with you.
There's no K.
Number 13.
Yeah, let's get on with number 13, shall we? Rude. Number 13. Absolutely rude.
You shall not pass.
Oh, Christ.
Question 14. Snake. Snake. Snake.
Do you want the exact game that that's from?
He has put a specific number, so yes.
Okay.
Question 15 is Jason. Question 16. You know when I promised to kill you last. That's right, you did. I lied. That makes no sense whatsoever. You know when I promised to kill you last? Question mark. That's right, you did. Exclamation mark. I lied.
I assume that's from two different people. It's a conversation.
But as a conversation, it doesn't work. Because he asked, you know when I promised to kill you last?
Yeah.
And the reply is, that's right, you did.
Yeah, you promised to kill me last. And it's, I lied. So he's going to kill him before last.
Right, yes, that does make sense. Mm. I'm with you. Yeah, baby.
Wait, are we on 17?
That was 17, yep. Either that or that was a really weird film. Number 18.
This is Sparta.
Excellent.
Darters. Question 19. Bite my shiny metal ass. I hate saying that word like that. And question 20. Self-destruct sequence has been activated.
What? That could be from, like, anything.
That could be for anything. That,
yeah, that's a bit random.
That's a bit of a bad question.
Don't blame me.
Okay, I'm going to take a wild stab in the dark. Boom.
Oh, Cravendale's lovely.
I've got 11.
I've got 14.
Ooh, but, here we go then.
But I don't... It's because it's 2 points. It's a point for the thing and a point for the character, isn't it?
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh.
I need to get a pen out for this.
So I think I've got a lot more then.
Yeah, because I think you probably beat me because I haven't got all the characters. It's
getting serious now. I've drawn K, P,
ooh,
a line down the middle, and I'm about to tally.
Oh, God.
So, question one.
Oh, I didn't, okay. Didn't...
Welcome to Primetime, bitch.
Didn't get it.
No, I've no idea.
That was Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Alright.
Question 2. It costs $400,000 to fire it for exactly 12 seconds.
No.
No idea.
Heavy weapons guy from Team Fortress.
Yeah.
Okay.
3. Swooping is bad.
No.
Spider-Man.
No, apparently it's Alistair from Dragon Age Origins.
No, I haven't played that, bollocks.
Question 4. A man chooses a slave obeys.
No.
Andrew Ryan from Bioshock.
Yes. Well done. Question 5. Mother believed this world was irredeemable, but she was wrong, father.
No.
No, no idea.
That's Eleanor Lamb from Bioshock 2.
Oh.
No, I am your father.
That's Darth Vader from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, yes. 4-2. Peter. Question 7, but more importantly, his soul and now my soul is saying it wants to stop you.
No idea.
No idea.
Dante, Devil May Cry 3. Yeah. Do a barrel roll.
Star Fox, but I can't remember what the character name is.
His name is Slippy.
There was no answer and it doesn't ring any bell, so I'm going to give 2 to Peter and 1 to
Chris. It is Slippy from Star Fox. He's right. It's absolutely right.
Okay.
Yeah. Number 9, War Never Changes.
Is there just the narrator from Fallout?
Yeah, yeah.
It is the narrator.
It's from Fallout 3.
From Fallout 3, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's from Fallout, but you could have had...
Thingy's father?
Ron Perlman was the actual actor. For,
it's true. But you'll accept the narrator.
Yes, no, that's cool. That's cool.
I got 1 out of that. That is not good. I only got 1 because I didn't put narrator.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I gave you 2 because you agreed with Chris when he said narrator.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't write it down, Lewis.
I've been very honest.
I've only got 1. I've only got 1.
Very honest. Right.
Very honest of you.
Thanks. Thank
so
you.
So it's now 7-5 to Peter. Number 10, here's Johnny.
presumably Johnny. I don't know what his surname is from The Shining.
Johnny from The Shining is correct.
Yeah.
Doe.
Homer from The Simpsons.
A female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun.
That'd be a horrible double bluff if it was that.
Yeah.
But presumably it's Homer from The Simpsons.
It was Homer Simpson from The Simpsons. Yeah. Bunch of slack-jawed faggots around here. This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus just like me.
Peter's dad? There we go.
Is it my dad?
I so wanted to be Peter's dad.
Aww.
It's not. It's Blaine from Predator.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Number 13, You Shall Not Pass.
Gandalf, Lord of the Rings, whatever the first one is.
I've just got Lord of the Rings. The Ring.
Yes, well done. So I'll give you one Peter, two Chris. So it is all gaps closing. It is 12-11 to Peter.
Ooh.
Snake, snake, snake.
Roy Campbell from every Metal Gear Solid game ever.
I got Otacon from the original Metal Gear Solid.
See, now you say it. Otacon does also say it.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he does.
I'm going to give you both 2 points there, I think.
Because it's Campbell in the second one.
Yeah, Campbell also says it in the first one as well, though.
Yeah.
15, Jason.
Whatever the dude's name is in Heavy Rain, I can't remember what his name is.
You get one for Heavy Rain.
Yeah, it's the dad. From Heavy Rain.
I'll give you Heavy Rain. It was Ethan Mars.
That was
that memorable character.
Yes. Question 6, who only shaved half his face. Question 16, you know when I promised to kill you last? That's right, you did. See, no, it doesn't make sense.
Yes, no, it does.
No, because it says, you know when.
Yeah.
That's right. You know when I promised to kill you, lad.
Yes, as in saying...
do you remember the time?
Yes.
No, it's not. It's Chris, let's roleplay.
Okay. You know where I remember to kill you last? Remember where I...
Yes.
No, oh. It's, you know when I promised to kill you last?
Yes, but you did.
The inclusion of when makes that...
No, it's not. It's him saying, you know when I promised I would kill you last, like, as in you will be the last person I kill.
Yeah, but then the bloke's reply is, that's right, you did.
Did promise me that you would kill me last.
Yeah, but that's not what he's saying. If he would have said, you know I promised to kill you last, that's right, you did.
Yeah.
But he says, you know when I promised you kill me. So he's saying, you know when I did this.
Yes.
The bloke says, that's right, you did. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he's saying, that's right, you did. You did promise to kill me last.
No, but that's not what he... That's not the question he asked him.
Yes, I do remember when you promised to kill me last.
But he didn't ask him that. It's not the question he asked.
Oh, Lewis, you're getting so true angry. We don't know what film it is. What was it?
No, okay. I've no idea.
Apparently it was Matrix from Commando.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, baby.
Austin Powers from the first Austin Powers film.
Austin Powers, yeah.
It could have been Austin Powers from any three of them, but yes. Yeah. This is Sparta.
Is his name Leonidas in 300?
Peter, have you got any answers for that?
I've got Gerard Butler, 300.
Okay, you get one for 300. Chris, you get two because it is Leonidas.
Oh, I wasn't sure. I thought it was.
Now a tie.
Ooh.
We are now on 18 each.
Oh, Jesus. I wasn't expecting that.
19, Bite My Shiny Metal Ass.
Bender from Futurama.
That's what I've got.
Bender from Futurama is 20.
Oh, my goodness.
And number 20, Self-Destruct Sequence Has Been Activated.
The computer from Star Trek, The Next Generation.
That's what I've got, Star Trek.
No. They do say that. His answer was the self-destruct message from Resident Evil 1.
But that...
Yes, just drop it. It's Lone Steven. Thank you very much for your quiz, Steven.
Is that a tie?
Thanks, Steven. I had fun.
Let me just find, you know, I don't want to upset Kev if he's listening. I don't want to upset him, so let's find a numerical...
I don't think it's possible to upset Kev, is it?
No, he's very...
He's calling Kevin.
Yeah, call him Kevin. He does get quite annoyed.
Well... Apart from that, I think it is actually scientifically impossible to make that man unhappy.
And to be fair, he's even when you call him Kevin, he doesn't really get that annoyed.
He's just like, oh, you scamps. I'm going to say something brilliant.
Bastard.
He's disarmingly lovely.
He is. He's such a nice guy.
I reckon it's a ploy. You know, somewhere when he dies, they'll find something buried in his house somewhere.
Yeah, organs.
Yes, he'll find like small children just locked up somewhere. Mark my words. And if they don't, I'll plant them.
Anyway, if you've got a numerical question.
Let me just find a numerical tiebreaker. Let me think of one.
A what?
Just a little bit. Okay, let me just do a quick Google search.
Thrilling radio here.
Yeah. Okay, how many to the nearest whole month? Hang on.
What?
Sorry, talk amongst yourselves for a minute.
Oh, dearie me.
What are you doing here, Lewis? You know, you can't have a question.
I'm on the fly here.
You stop halfway through.
Chris, I think it's safe to say that you and I have very good knowledge of both films and games.
Yeah, well, I think we did well.
Okay,
very well.
To the nearest month, what is the gestation period of elephants?
It's like 20 months, I think.
I've wrote 20 for Chris.
I'm going to say 19.
19 for Peter. The gestation period for elephants is actually 22
months. Yes, success.
So well done, Chris.
Well, clap, clap, clap.
I like this. I get clapped. I'm liking this. Peter can come in again.
That's wonderful.
Excellent.
I'd just like to point out, I didn't clap you.
No, well, you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
That was a rather good, quiz there. Thank you, Stephen. You did well.
Thanks, Stephen.
No one says good quiz to me.
Well, it's because yours aren't good.
Pick holes in it. And go, oh, that's swing shit.
Right.
Fine, I'm not
questions and jazz. That's the bit we're up to. We're running really long, so I'd make it snappy.
No, we've only been recording for like 15 minutes.
You can't.
Question time.
Tom H. Lord says, has anyone in the world, this is on Twitter, has anyone in the world seen Senna, isn't it? Yeah, Senna. Apart from him and Peter.
I've just seen your tweet.
Anyway, have you seen Senna?
What was the question?
Has anyone seen Senna?
No.
I saw him racing when I was a child because I used to watch Formula One, but I only saw him on the television. Does that count?
No, he
means the film.
Presumably he means the film.
Well,
have you seen the film Senna?
He was very unclear.
I do want to see it, although I'm not a fan of F1. I don't understand it. I don't get it. It seems completely boring to me, but I do want to watch it because it does seem like quite a good documentary. So
cool. Yeah, it does look good.
I will see it soon.
Tough Cub has two weird questions. Why is it?
What has he done anything with that power to the people?
I don't know, maybe. Why is it you can walk down a road even if it goes uphill?
Northerners.
And also, he says, why do we say the alarm went off when in fact it went on?
For the same reasons that we say that a horn sounds off or an alarm sounds off or something like that.
Because sound off means make a noise. So sound off is a term. So when something makes a noise, it's sounding off.
Maybe it's something to do with the trajectory of sound waves.
Yes.
Is this the marvelous Tough Cub?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Tough Cub. Maybe it's something to do with the way that sounds travel off of an object. So, for example, an alarm is a singular device, and the sound waves emanate from it, and therefore maybe those sound waves are coming off. Yeah, so the alarm goes off, because it is the alarm, as in the alarm is actually the sound. The alarm is going off. As for walking down a road, I think that's just because of the beautiful English language and its many idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, I'm a little less articulate when it comes to things like that, and I blame going down the shops to the northerners.
Why?
Because they talk like that, don't they?
Yeah.
For the north.
Look, guys, where is the north in your opinion?
Above Portsdown Hill.
Where's that?
It's pretty,
that, very top of Portsmouth.
There's a hill that surrounds Portsmouth. Anything north of that right. is the north to Lewis.
Which, strangely, I now live beyond, so I'm living in the north. I'm living the dream. I left Portsmouth in the hope of finding something new.
My joking definition is anything above anything above about Luton, because you can get to Luton by train from Brighton.
I'd say anything above London.
But realistically, in an actual conversation, I'd say the north probably starts at about Nottingham or so.
I'd say anything above London.
Yeah, it depends for how serious
where,
I was
where
being.
Are you then?
Where am I? I'm in Bristol.
Ooh.
Yeah, ooh, yeah, I
Why
know.
Don't you have a farmer's accent?
Why? Because I come from Tunbridge Wells.
Oh.
Royal Tunbridge Wells, don't you know? I think anything above London is basically just barren waste ground. Yeah. Just, I mean, like, you've played Fallout 3. It's basically that from Watford onwards.
Yeah.
It's barren wasteland filled with pregnant teenagers and gravy on chips.
Basically.
You get past London. Suddenly, an awful lot of fields once you get past London.
Have you never driven around the south?
It's very odd. Yeah.
I went to Winchester the other day. All you get between Portsmouth and Winchester is fucking
Yeah, real. But it's for like a little bit.
It's not at all,
no,
Chris.
No, but I think you go on the train. I go on the train.
Go on Google Earth and you'll see that apart from Southampton, Portsmouth, Brighton, not even Brighton because most of that's surrounded by, all of that is just green. You're wrong, Chris.
I grew up in Kent, which is referred to as the Garden of England.
Yeah, but like,
oh my god!
But you go. I go from.
I know.
You go from London to Birmingham on the train, and it's about 2 hours of just fields for 2 hours. That's an awful lot.
Yeah,
of fields.
But who likes fields? Who cares about fields apart from Northerners? Obviously,
put a fucking city there. There should be something
in
between.
I have to say, because I was in Winchester learning how to restrain kids. and
how do you restrain kids? What do you do?
I had to do one the other day. Brilliant.
What do? You put me in a chokehold?
No, there's loads of techniques. Like it's not all about strength. It's actually just putting their bodies in positions that their bodies aren't meant to be in.
Right.
So that then they just can't move out of them.
What, you're going to pretend to be a tree?
Yeah. Like if you grab the underside of their forearm,
right,
and lift their arm so that the elbow's bent. And that their like forearm is up under their armpit, and then with an adult underneath that pushing up, they just can't physically get out of it. So if you do that on both sides and wrap arms around the back, then they're fucked. They're not going anywhere.
Right. Hold on a second. So just arm underneath the, and this is to restrain children.
Yes. Arm under forearm. Push. Forearm up,
yep,
under armpit, so elbow is sticking out behind
them. Excellent, right. Good.
But yeah, when I was driving to Winchester, it was absolutely lovely because the sun was out. I'm not a fan of the sun, but it does make things look nicer. And it was just fields and miles of countryside.
Anyway, let's turn to the forum questions. Because we didn't have very many Twitter questions, and you got your email.
There was more than that, though.
No, that's all I got.
Are you sure?
That's all I can see with the tier. Oh, I've got a couple of replies to me. Wait. Let me see. Adam Guest says, talk about the Assassin's Creed movie gaining traction today.
It'll be shit.
Who cares? It's a video game. Leave it at that.
Discuss.
Who cares? It's Assassin's Creed.
Discuss game to movie translations, specifically focusing on Street Fighter, which is, of course, in my opinion, the greatest film ever made.
Right, let's... New question?
Right, so movie... I didn't have any of it on Twitter, so if you've spotted some, Lewis, let me know, but I'm going to shift to the forum. Tony Cawley says, clearly the generics... Oh, wait, what's this? Oh, wait, here we go. We'll do Solid Stevens ones. He does, like, five. I'm just going to pick one.
Pick a good one.
This is quite a good one. What game universe would you choose to live in?
We've run out of this one. I quite like the thought of living in Fallout.
It seems quite desolate.
No, but it seems brilliant. Lawless and...
fair enough.
Rugged.
Either
that or... Limbo.
I would quite like to live in the land that Zool lives in, because
candy,
it is all sweeties.
Level, yeah. And God of War. I'd love to live in God of War.
There's no sweets in God of War, though.
No, but there are like threesomes. Hot, all you got to do is press up and circle, and you know, you've got a threesome.
Nice.
I would...
it's not that easy in real life.
I think I'd quite like to live in Flower. Seems quite chilled out there.
Oh, you're such a girl.
Quite laid back.
Why is it with you in fields?
Oh, trust. I know what it is. He's Brighton.
Well, I'm thinking about all.
You know, there's me and you. Fallout and.
I'm thinking like, of stuff.
Because it's got sweet.
But stuff like Halo, but even in.
You've said Assassin's Creed in the past, I think. Would you like to live in Assassin's Creed world?
I think that would only be Assassin's Creed would only be cool if you were actually the main character.
Yeah,
Desmond.
It'd be shit if you were anyone else.
But, yeah, because you're just going to get run into by some player. Yeah.
But if
now plus, you know about Desmond, you can sort of set up your own bureau of assassins.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
You know, branch out, become an entrepreneur.
Mm.
Plus, the advantage is if you're Desmond, you get to like jump back into the future, whereas otherwise you have to. You're stuck in the past, and people are trying to assassinate you a lot. But stuff like Halo would be rubbish because everything's a war zone, and the Covenant keep turning planets into glass, which sounds horribly unpleasant.
I'd like to live in Heavy Rain's universe because that was just—I mean, that would never happen.
Where else would be good to live? Rayman's universe seems all right. Seems quite cool. Or do you guys remember Cool Spot? That was quite good. That was all on the beach and stuff.
Yeah, that was all right. I'd like to live in. I don't know. Do I get to take on some of the characteristics, or is it just the land that I'm living in?
Well, presumably you kind of like you'd adapt to fit into the land. So
yeah, okay. Then I think I'd like to live in. Tetris, because then I'd never feel like I didn't fit in.
He'd be like the man that runs across the blocks every now and then.
Yeah,
you know, like the power up you get.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be that guy. I'd be like, "Hey, check it out! Well done. You've wasted some more of your life. Hey."
Ooh, missed me.
Right, I'm gonna let Haslam have two questions because one of them is quite simple. Pirates or ninjas?
Pirates.
This is tough. But I am going to go with ninjas on the Ross Noble logic, which is pirates are deadly because they got cannons. But what do you need to light cannons? Matches. And what do you need for matches? Hands. What a pirate's got? Hooks. So they got cannons, but they can't fucking light them.
I'm going to have to decline to comment on this one.
It's too hard.
I just don't want to...
Don't alienate anyone.
I don't want to... You know, I'm just, you know... I don't want to split my fan base on this one, so...
Your fan base consists entirely of pirates and ninjas.
Exactly. And guys, just let the war stop, okay? Just put down your weapons.
Right. Haslam also says, if you created a console, what would you call it? The Crisp Box. I'm that self-involved.
I would call it the...
I would call mine the Smile.
The Smile.
The Smile. Get it now on Smile. Or, you know, it would be it would just I'd ride on the wave of that sort of Wii stuff. You know, people would be like, oh, what kind of console have you got? I've got an Xbox. What kind of console have you got? I've got a PlayStation. What kind of console have you got? I've got a Smile.
Oh, and you like theme tune could be Smile.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I'd call mine Spabbage.
Okay.
Out now on PC and Spabbage. It just sounds
I like it. Works well. Right, you had an email.
Or come round and play Spab. People would abbreviate it to shorten it to Spab.
Obviously.
Come around and play the Idge.
The Idge.
Have you got the Idge? Yeah,
oh, that's just weird. the other one, you had a thingy question, Lewis. Email.
Yes, I did have a thingy question.
What's your email question?
I'm just unlocking my.
What's going down in there? That shit.
The question is
and what not.
Ralph Thompson, also known as RHT992, and he says, I also have a question for the podcast. We all know games turned into films suck for the most part, but would they work as a TV show? They'd have more time to develop the story and characters, and they wouldn't have to turn the adaptations into Hollywood blockbusters. I always thought GTA 4 would make a fantastic show in the style of The Wire. Are there any games you could see being turned into a TV show, with things like The Walking Dead? I'm sure there's a market for geeky dramas on TV anyway. I think something like Mass Effect would work extremely well as a Star Trek style show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that'd be good.
There's already talk of what's it called? Dead Island being turned into a film, although that is a film.
Yeah.
Is it Dead Island? Or whatever it's called. What was the other thing I thought? No.
Are they still developing, what's it called? Space Invaders, or whatever the hell it was called. Are they still developing that? Or, no, Missile Command. Are they still developing that?
Oh, yeah, they're doing crazy shit. Like, Asteroids is still being developed.
Yeah.
Mental stuff like that. Yeah, it's weird.
I'm glad that the person that asked the question said, are there any games, rather than, do you think games can? Because I think that that's a very pertinent question, because I think that there are some games that can be turned very... That lend themselves better to TV or to film. It's just that, unfortunately, I think that the games that have been chosen so far just really don't lend themselves to it. So
yeah. No, I think they're bad choices.
They've been chosen on popularity, haven't they?
Exactly, and I think that, you know, whenever you make that, I mean, we could make a film about the Hungry Caterpillar, but you can't film 90 minutes of a film with the Hungry Caterpillar. You just can't. You can't do it with Mario. You can't do it with Street Fighter. Not really.
No.
They've picked these games that don't have very deep or involving stories.
No. See, the ones that I think are the big long ones, like Fallout and even Rage, I think you could take the characters and the storylines, because they've got more of a defined environment and other things going on other than the sort of linear narrative that you could make a decent TV series out there.
I guess my question is, why would you want to? What does the medium of the screen give you that can't be done in video games? Because, you know,
that's a good question.
You know, I think that, like, in a lot of ways, video games are kind of like this massive combination of animation, you know, film, CGI. You know, you can do a cutscene, and that's basically television, you know, like that's one long, so you can do all this stuff, and then you can do interaction, and then you can do all this other stuff. So I don't really see the point in why people
I suppose
would
it depends
do.
On partly the writers, because I think there's a few really good writers that would prefer writing for TV than they would a game, so they haven't got into it as such.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's not always the case, because like I was thinking the other day about sequels, you know, movie sequels tend to be shitter than the prequel, than the original rather. And I always thought, well, how come games manage to, the sequels tend to be better? And yet it's the same thing. You've already got that universe, the environment built up. So why is it that game sequels have managed to up the ante every time, whereas film sequels tend to sort of filter off. And I was thinking, like Uncharted, for example, you got brilliant writers there that have managed to come up with great sequels, and hopefully sequels when the third one comes out. So why haven't they been able to do that in film? If you see what I mean.
Mm.
So I think it's the same thing. I think it comes at the end of the day. It comes down to the writers that are involved, and the directors, because I think people that work on TV and film exclusively may have ideas that could bring something new to a game adaptation.
Mm, that's interesting. Yeah.
Mm. See, I what I'd like to see is going the other way, is taking a game but producing it as truly episodic. So you get about 30 minutes of gameplay every week. Mm. I just think it'd be really interesting to see games delivered that way. So you've got these really tight narratives.
And for me as well, again, I use Uncharted only because it's a game that I've played that I've experienced it on. For the most part, I would say that emotion comes across a lot better on TV and film than it does on games, unless it's something like Uncharted, where they've again managed to, because of the writing and the way that it's done, they've managed to get a lot of emotion and genuine feeling into the game as well. But things like Fallout and those massive RPGs, the only sort of emotion that you get from them is because you've invested so many hours into it that you feel like it's yours.
Yeah.
Whereas you're not necessarily getting that emotion from the actual characters, if that makes sense.
Well, to return to this episodic idea, there are examples of games that have done that, and there are games supposedly on the horizon that will do it as well, but they just haven't particularly done well, which is unfortunate. The structure doesn't seem to lend itself too well to the sort of games arena. I mean, for example, we're meant to be seeing Alan Wake broken up into six different half-hour, you know, sections. And sold off piecemeal. We're meant to be seeing that soon. In fact, the game was meant to release like that in the first place. And for our American cousins listening, they will know that Siren, Blood Curse, the re-release on PS3, was released in very short chapters that could be completed in half an hour, 45 minutes, that sort of thing. And that did do... I've got that thing sitting on my shelf because obviously I'm British, I've got the physical edition and it only comes in that. That release is very odd because it means that it's very staccato. It's very sort of, it is very sort of broken up and because you put a disc in, you kind of expect it to flow all the way through it, but you don't. Mm. It's very stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. But if you're downloading it piecemeal, like Chris was suggesting, I think that game would work a lot better. So I think that those structures and formats do work and they are, or they can work, and they are available to us at the moment. I just don't think that I think the games industry is kind of in a bit of a rut at the moment. It doesn't really know what it wants to do. I think that the emphasis at the moment isn't being placed on storytelling and changing up new and interesting things with that.
No.
It's kind of based at the moment, I think all of the focus is on mobile platforms and on casual and freemium models. I think that the actual business side of things is the big concentration of energy at the moment, and unfortunately I think the actual narrative storytelling and that sort of thing is kind of suffering. So it'd be really interesting to see. That is a brilliant question. Little clap for him as well.
Get a sticker. That's why I'm a massive sort of fan and advocate of the games like Journey and Ico, The Last Guardian, because they... And again, not to sound like a broken record, but to some extent Uncharted as well, because they do make you think outside the general conventions of games and whatever, and they make you feel something, you get an attachment to them, whatever, that like you say, isn't present in most of gaming today, because they're too concerned with making Modern Warfare 3 or Modern Warfare 59 or whatever.
Yeah, so, it's true. It's a shame that there's this... Like you're saying, there's this move to going, how can we monetize this medium the best, rather than how can we make this medium the best it can be? Which is a limitation from the publisher's end. I know it's rarely from the developer's end. There are developers going, well, we want to make money, but there are very few developers who go, well, we want to make money and sod the game. Most of them say me are very passionate about the projects they work on.
But it's just that they may be passionate about them, but to some extent what they're passionate about is a very generic thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't necessarily know that, but
that's just my opinion. That's what I get. Like I say, I'm not hating on Modern Warfare before anyone starts on that, but using it as an example, to me personally, that comes across as a very generic thing. You start off with a set thing, and they don't really do anything to it outside of what you expect, really.
Oh, yeah. But the people I meet who are the most passionate are people like Ronimo, who are working on Awesome Noughts, and that's really different.
Yeah.
Or even Rocksteady, the guy, I forget her surname, but Sarah, the community manager at Rocksteady, is so terrifyingly passionate about that game. She is a little bit scary. That is how passionate she is about that game. She's lovely, but she scares me a little bit, because I'm not sure anyone should be that excited about just anything, even a product they're trying to sell. You don't talk to people who are working on, you don't talk to people working on FIFA much, and they go, yeah, no, FIFA's going to be amazing. They go, well, we're making FIFA and it does this, and this, which is slightly a difference, I find.
It's because we're still in this mindset at the moment of, you hear lots of people sort of saying things like, we are going to make the best shooter ever. Like, we are going to make the best shooter. And that, to me, sounds really, really odd. Like, you never hear people in other mediums. Like, take books, for example. You never hear those people saying, I am going to make the best crime novel ever. Yeah. Like, that sounds so odd. Like, you know, that in different forms, you know, in mature forms where we've got past this sort of, like, it's a toy, it's a, you know, it's a business model, it's all of this sort of stuff. You know, we have... you have people saying, well, I want to tell this story, I want to do this and I want to do that. They don't say, we're going to make the best shooter. No. And like, I don't mind bagging on Modern Warfare. Like I think that series has had its day and it is done. Like, there's nothing else that we can really do with it. Let's give it a rest and move on to do something else. You know, can you imagine if Activision took all the money that they were going to put in, that they have put and will still put into Modern Warfare 3, and gave it to some developer, some small developer. If they gave it to,
even like Sledgehammer Games, which they funded, and then went, you work on Modern Warfare now. After the Infinity Ward debacle. But like they looked like they were almost going to do that. They always went to Sledgehammer and went, no, you can make something cool. And then they went, oh, wait, no, you've got to make Modern Warfare.
Yeah. See, I've got sort of three main opinions on the, you know, we're going to make the best thing ever. And one is, part of me thinks that people know that it's a flagging genre, and it's something that people have really struggled to come up with something new and exciting. In an FPS, so that they almost have to go that extra mile of building up in order to make it seem like it's more than it is. Then I think, you know, by the nature of the genre, it's quite a testosterone, you know, brash, in your face genre, isn't it? So, you know, it's just another, they're like, yeah, this is the best shooter ever, you can do
but
three guns in one hand sort of thing.
The thing I find really interesting though is you don't, or at least you rarely get that attitude from the people who genuinely are making the best one. You get all these people who go out, Activision obviously big their game up, but you don't go, Call of Duty is the best shooter in the world.
No.
Like when the fashion was for building Halo Killers, Bungie weren't sitting there going, well, Halo is the best shooter. Well, of course everyone's targeting us. They just kept making Halo. Like, they knew how to make Halo. Mm. And that's the thing, is these people, they're just making they made a game that when it was released came out and was original and different. And although, as you say, Peter, Call of Duty, like Modern Warfare and that sort of thing, has well had its day, I actually think Black Ops was a nice change of pace. But the Modern Warfare series after this third one, I'm hoping is done. But
yeah, and-
but they. they came out and they were different and they changed, like Modern Warfare, although there was, I still contend that Modern Warfare was just a rip-off of Battlefield 2, but they revolutionized the industry at the time. Mm. Halo completely changed the way we played shooters at the time, and they introduced the, there were games that featured Space Marines before, but if you look at the amount before and like pre and post Halo, Halo really defined the hulking Space Marine genre, and Modern Warfare defined the modern combat shooter and that kind of thing. And to an extent, StarCraft defined RTSs, and you get stuff that takes elements directly from StarCraft. And they're going up against these going, yeah, we want to be better than X, instead of going, yeah, no, we want to make a really cool, interesting game. They're going, no, we want to target exactly this. Like, you don't get, like, Rockstar, they didn't go, yeah, we want to make the best, like, superhero game in the world. We want to make the best, like, brawler game in the world. They just went, no, we kind of want to make a really cool Batman game.
Yeah.
And they did.
And I think the thing with Modern Warfare, of that type of thing in particular, is it doesn't have the hype of the quality to live up to. It has the hype of the amount of money it made to live up to. So if it doesn't become the next, like the newest, biggest entertainment launch in history, then it would have been seen as a failure. Whereas Uncharted, again, they don't have, although it's a very successful game commercially, the thing that they're living up to or working on making better is the storyline, the characters, and the experience of playing the game, not what the game will sell. That's their benchmark, whereas Modern Warfare's benchmark is the amount of money it will make. So they have to say, this is going to be the best game ever, because if they don't live up to that financial sort of line, then it's a failure.
Yes, that's true. And a little bit depressing, and weird, because it wasn't how Modern Warfare started.
No.
Modern Warfare, kind of when it started, was like a little bit, weirdly, it was a little bit experimental when it started. Like, there weren't very many people really making like modern combat shooters at the time.
No, it was all like World War stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they kind of changed how it was done. And I imagine what those guys from Infinity Ward, I come up with their new companies called, but they're being published by EA. And whatever they do next will probably revolutionize whatever they do then.
Dice.
They're not Dice. Dice already existed. Like, the guys from Infinity Ward went and formed a new company that's doing like EA Partners. But like when they were the first time they were at EA, and they built Medal of Honor and kind of changed the way that World War II shooters worked, and they changed the way that modern combat shooters worked when they moved to Activision and eventually went on to make Modern Warfare. I imagine whatever they make next, which they said probably won't be a shooter, but will probably change whatever they're working on next. I could do with a revolutionary platformer. That'd be nice. Anyway, Peter, you've gone terribly quiet.
No, I'm listening to the fascinating conversation.
All right. We should probably end, because it's quite a long podcast now. Yes. So that was quite interesting. That's a very good question. I don't know how we got from what should be made into a TV series to what like putting the industry to rights. But... But yes, anyway, this was episode 40 of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast. I am, as always, your host, Chris Lipscomb. You can get me at twitter.com/HalPro, and obviously you can get me over at the Sixth Axis. Be joined, as per normal, by my rather lovely co-host, Lewis Gaston, who you can get at twitter.com/LewisGaston, and you can find over at screendemon.com. Filling in for Peter, whose internet is unfortunately broken, we had Peter Willington, who writes for the Sixth Axis occasionally, has his own podcast label over at In Retrospect Podcast. It's very good. You should listen. And the complete opposite to what this is. Like, if you want like a palate cleanse after listening to this, go and listen to some of the In Retrospect stuff. It's like actually feels like they thought about what they were saying before they said it. And also writes over at a variety of sites like Midlife Gamer. And you can get it at twitter.com/000, but it's X's instead of Z's. Don't put Z's, that's some other dude. X's. You want the X's.
He's getting very angry now.
Yeah. I believe that's it. So thank you all for listening to episode 40. We'll be back next week. Pete, you did a bang up job. I'm sure we'll have you back at some point.
Brilliant. Yeah,
yeah,
great.
It's been nice to get to know you.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you for listening. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye. Cool. Can I stop recording?
Yeah, I can't be asked to do a post-credits bit, so I'll just stop.
Chris, if you can't be bothered, then don't feel the pressure from myself and Lewis saying that, you know, this is what the fans want. This is... don't feel the pressure from us saying, you have got podcast listeners who have paid absolutely nothing for this audio show and are damn well expecting some hilarious... post-show comedy. Chris, don't even think about them, all right? Don't even consider them for one second, because you are a busy man. And just because me and Lewis think that the people listening are lovely and wonderful people, and Chris, you wouldn't piss on them if they were on fire, just because of all that, and you want to go to bed and have some pizza in your bed, just because of that.
You call it bed, it's pizza in his comics.